Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. Are we products of nature or nurture? And how does karma and meditation fit into this, if at all? Okay. Nature and nurture. This is the big debate in psychology. It's the big debate in human development. Is how we are due to our nature, meaning our genes, that which comes into us biologically, genetically, or nurture, our environment, our parents, our upbringing? This is a very specific academic debate that has gone on for quite some time, particularly in the psychological community. And here's what we now know from all of the studies that we've done. We know that we are a product of both, of nature and nurture, but not only nature and nurture. So we are a product of our genes. We know that. There's a reason some of us have brown hair, some of us have blonde hair, some have blue eyes, some have brown eyes. There's a reason that some of us are tall, some are short. For some, it's really difficult to lose a pound. For some, it's really difficult to gain a pound. Some come into this world with athletic ability. Some come in with the ability to learn to sing. Others, I mean, we all have different skills that it seems like we've had since childhood. It's not that you wait till we've grown to discover who's an athlete, who can sing, who can dance, who can draw, who can paint. In nursery school, in kindergarten, early in elementary school, you start to see abilities, skills. You also start to see different aspects of our nature. Some people tend to be calmer, more peaceful by nature. They're the type of, yeah, it's okay, let it go, no problem. Even bad things happen, they're able to kind of keep smiling and brush it off. Not in denial, not in repression, but really just, it doesn't faze them so much. Then there's other people who seem to be bothered by the tiniest little things. Nothing is right. And again, a lot of this starts even from childhood. And what we know is, a lot of that is what we would call genetic. Not that there's a gene for being stressed and anxious and nothing being able to be right, but just that a lot of this is passed through in our DNA, or it's passed through in a way that maybe we don't even yet know of our parents, biological parents. So actually, as we are in the womb, actually that comes through. Now, I mention all of this because what they've done is they've done studies of children, twins, who are separated at birth. This is where all of these studies come. Because usually people who have the same genes also have the same environment. Which people have the genes closest to each other? Twins. Siblings have similar genes. Cousins have somewhat less similar but more similar than general population, and on and on. Those who have almost identical genes are going to be twins. But they also have almost identical experiences. They're born at the same time. They're born in the same family. They grow up with typically the same opportunities. But now we've done all of these studies of twins who were separated at birth. Both were adopted. One was adopted. And what they find is, miraculously, 30, 40 years later, one loves strawberry ice cream, the other loves strawberry ice cream. One is a country singer, the other is a country singer. One can't stand the winter, the other can't stand the winter. One is an accountant, the other is an accountant. One has three children and has given them names of flowers. The other has three children, has given them names of flowers. I mean, really, really uncanny coincidences. But that only accounts for a little bit of the variation. It's fascinating, it's fun. Because the idea that you've somehow come into this world genetically predisposed to love coffee ice cream is sort of a fun thing to think about. Or that you could somehow be genetically predisposed to a certain type of career or to have your own family in a certain way. So that kind of stuff it's fun. It's interesting. But it doesn't actually account for the vast amount of variability. Interestingly, though, neither does the environment. You have the opposite situation then. You have same family environment, an adopted child who has been brought in. Different genes, exact same situation. Will you close the door, Nandini, sweetie? Thank you. Exact same environment, completely different genes. Again, some similarities, but not nearly enough to account for everything. And even when you take both into consideration, twins raised in the same environment, genetically, almost identical, environmentally almost identical. Especially if they're identical twins, so two boys, two girls, so you don't even have distinctions of how boys are treated or how girls are treated. Nonetheless, vastly different in personalities. So what accounts for the difference? This is where a third element, which is made up of so many other elements, comes into play. And that's what we're going to call the us part of that. Okay? We're not our genes. We know that. We're also not our environment. We know that. We know that we've been impacted by our genes. We've been impacted by our environment, but we know that we are not them. Each of us can look back at our families. We can see where we've been impacted, but we also know where we have made different choices, where we've overcome certain challenges, or we have different values or different ethics or have made different decisions. Now, this is where a different type of environment comes into play. And here's what's really interesting, because usually in the nature-nurture debate, nurture refers to environment. But that environment is the family environment, the school environment. Okay. But now we have a different type of environment. Now we have the environment that determines which of our genetic predispositions actually end up getting turned on or turned off. There's a great amount of research being done in a field called epigenetics, which says, okay, you have these genes. But even if you have these genes, that doesn't mean 100% this is going to happen. Right? I mean, these days now, they're coming up with all of these studies to see, do you have a gene for this type of cancer? Do you have a gene for this illness or that illness? But even with the gene, doesn't mean you're 100% going to get it. The gene means maybe you're 30% likely to get it, maybe 60% likely, but not 100%. And what the science of epigenetics is showing us is that more important than the gene itself is the interaction of the environment of the cell, means the bloodstream, with that DNA. So what comes into the cell? What activates those genes to be expressed? Now, I'm not going to go into all of this here. If it is something you're interested, Google Dr. Bruce Lipton. Watch the incredible talks that he gives. He's a beautiful scientist that he gives about how the environment determines what turns on our genes. But what we know is what makes up the environment that our cells sit in, our bloodstream. Well, some of it's going to be genetic, sure. Some of it's going to be what we eat, because all of that which we eat ends up in our bloodstream. The food we eat, supplements we take, drugs we take, pollutants or toxins we're exposed to in our environment, all of this stuff ends up in our bloodstream. But also, that which we think, which we always thought was just sort of relegated to our brain. What we now know is that there is a cascading impact of what we think, what we believe, how we feel, our emotional world. Our thinking world on our cells. Again, I'm not going to go into too much of the details of that right here, but what's important to know is that even this debate of nature and nurture is no longer something we can distinguish. Because suddenly the things that I would have considered nature, my genes, my cells, I now know are being moderated by what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling, what I'm eating, what I'm breathing. Well, clearly that's environment, that's nurture. So even on a biological level, the two things are no longer one or the other. But then we come to this other element. And this is the us aspect, which is, what am I going to do with the genes I have? What am I going to do with the skills I have? What am I going to do with the abilities that I have? Does the fact that I prefer chocolate ice cream mean I'm going to eat 10 pints of it a day and develop heart disease and diabetes? Or does it mean that just when it comes to eating ice cream, that happens to be the one I choose? Well, that's up to me. This is about how I decide to live my life. And again, some of that we pick up from our parents, some we pick up from culture. But the huge variation that you see amongst 7 billion people, there are not 7 billion different types of nurture, 7 billion different cultural values. But we're all making different decisions. We all have entirely different internal worlds. And again, you see this even with people who share almost the same genes and in the same family. We look at siblings. In one family, someone who's so easygoing, gets along with everyone. Someone else for whom everything is a stress, everything is a problem, doesn't get along with people. Someone for whom life is a joy, someone for whom life is a burden, someone who's athletic, someone who's not athletic. All of this variation. Well, some of this, as the question said, what role does karma and meditation play? Well, some role of it is the role of karma. Karma plays a role in the nature, though, and in the nurture. Because karma is also impacting which womb I'm being born into, which family I'm being born into. Am I going to be adopted? Am I not going to be adopted? So karma begins working long before we've come out into this world. Karma is giving us a specific situation. But then karma also is playing a role in what we choose to do with the situation we're given. And this is where meditation, but not only meditation, this is where our choices play such an important role. The type of association we keep, the type of friends we keep, the type of mentors we have, the type of idols and models we have. Who is it we look at? I mean, there's no gene for who do you idolize, right? Is it that Bollywood or Hollywood actress or model? Or is it the prime minister of that country? Or is it the founder of that NGO? Or is it this artist? Or this spiritual leader? There's no gene for that. This comes from within. It's impacted by our family. It's impacted by our environment. But not determined by that. The association we keep, who our friends are. Well, that not only is a choice we make, but that ends up creating an environment that leads us to make other choices. This is where we emphasize the importance of association, of sangha, of satsang. We know the difference that it feels of being in a haunted house. You know, how you feel inside. Simply being somewhere where the environment is scary. Yeah, some of it's mental, of course, but a lot of it's vibrational. What it feels like to be sitting on the banks of Ganga in the Aarti. That power of association. And so meditation plays a huge role. Because what meditation does is meditation helps us see the truth of who we are. It cleans that window so that we can see, okay, this is nature, this is nurture, but where am I in all this? What role am I going to play? What role am I going to play in giving myself a bloodstream that's healthy, that's peaceful, that's life positive rather than illness positive? We also now know that people who make choices to serve others in a meaningful way actually not only are happier, which we could have expected, but are healthier than people who don't. Well, these are life choices. There's not a gene for that, or at least not in one that we know of yet. It's also not only nature, many people from very materialistic families may come out into the world and end up being the most altruistic, selfless people, and vice versa. You could come from a very deeply spiritual, altruistic family and end up being super selfish and materialistic. These things happen. Live long enough, you see a lot of examples of these sorts of things. And so this is where really the question for all of us is, not is it nature, is it nurture, but how can I, with what I have the ability to change, impact my own life? Can't change my genes, can't change the family I was born into, can't change the family who raised me. So I cannot, in this moment, alter any of that. So the debate itself becomes sort of a moot point. It becomes almost an exercise in futility, although academically interesting. The real question becomes, what do I have control over? Okay, that was my nature. This was my nurture. Here's where I am now. Now what do I have the ability to work with? How much is nature and nurture determining my life today? And how much can I change that? And what we now know from a neurological perspective, from a psychological perspective, from a chemical perspective, from a biological perspective, we know that our choices, our thoughts, our decisions of how to live impact the nature of the bloodstream and of the cells, impact the functioning and the structure of our brain, which neurology did not know when I was studying it, but we now know it. So we have the ability now, with meditation, with power of thought, with our intention, with learning from the right teachers or mentors or guides or whatever it is, to actually transform our own nature and our own environment to create whatever it is we want to create in our lives. So we're our own hurdle now. But we are also our own possibility. And that's what's really exciting.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM-FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. I have a strong sense of justice, and I get very upset at how unjust the world is. How can we live in a world with such injustice? And what can we do to help balance things out more? Our world itself is not unjust. What's unjust is how people in the world choose to behave. The injustice that we see is injustice brought upon the world by choices of people. Which means that we have a great responsibility. We have a great role that we can play. And what that role to play is how can we, in our environment, in our world, in whatever community we're in whatever aspect we have any impact or influence over, how can we live in justice, restore justice? But what we have to understand is, what does justice mean? What does that really look like? When we talk about injustice, well, if you look at nature, in nature what we see so frequently is certain animals killing other animals for their food. Right? Now that hurts us if we happen to be an animal lover. If you see any of these National Geographic specials, Discovery Channel specials, Animal Planet specials, and you see these beautiful, sweet, cute little creatures who are the food of the bigger creatures. Now, on some level, in our world, what we feel is that is unjust. And in our world, it actually is, which I'll come back to in a moment. But in nature, this is actually how nature works. Because otherwise the big animals wouldn't be able to survive. They wouldn't have anything to eat. This is how nature works. You see, even for example, trees, beautiful trees that end up dying due to parasitic vines or parasitic moss that grow on the tree and end up sucking its life out. Sadly, or not so sadly, depending on how we look at it, just it is, that's actually how a lot in nature is. But we could look at it and we could say, oh, that's so, so unjust. What can I do? Well, there's nothing that needs to be done in nature for that. That's how nature works, how Mother Earth balances herself. But in our world, we have alternatives. So for example, should we find ourselves the metaphoric big animals in society, the metaphoric big animals of the community, it isn't just for us to abuse, to exploit, to take advantage of those who are smaller and weaker. So rules and laws that apply in nature with the animal kingdom, with the plant kingdom, are not necessarily the rules and laws that apply in our world. And this is important to realize because I've just given vastly different situations. But in our own world, even in different communities, in different societies, in different places, there's different rules. There's different rules about who in society performs what duty. So for example, let's take a very specific example here in India. One of the tragic societal problems that we face is an issue of the caste system. Okay? This comes up over and over again. Now, many people misinterpret this, misdiagnose this as a religious issue. It's actually not. There is nowhere in the scriptures that justifies any sort of hereditary hierarchical system. There is nowhere, nothing that says this is better than that. To do this, to be a teacher, a warrior, is better or higher than to be a merchant or a cleaner. There's nothing hierarchical about them. What the system that we're given is a system called Varnavyavastha, which literally is a system of management of our society. And what it means is, in a society, you need lots of different roles to be played. You need teachers. You need warriors to protect the community. You need philosophers. You need a community that's going to produce items. You need a community that's going to have enough income to be able to purchase the items. Otherwise, those who produce won't be able to sell anything and they will not be able to succeed. So you need those who produce, you need those who have the money to purchase that which is produced. You need those who are able to put together the bottom line pieces that are used in production, to actually do the production. What today we would call factory type of workers. You need people to clean up the mess after the factory has produced it. After somebody's packaged it, after somebody else has bought it, there's going to be a mess. Somebody needs to clean it up. But nowhere was it said that any of these roles or jobs was better than or higher than any of the others. Nor was it said that this is hereditary. In fact, it was spoken about that even in one family, you could have someone who was this type and someone who was that and someone who was this type. Now, I bring this example up because when you think about injustice in society and something that we can do something about, but something that isn't actually natural, you look at something like this. Here we have something that is nature, which is different parts fulfill different roles. My hands do something different than my stomach. My ears do something different than my tongue. My feet do something different than my vocal cords, right? If my feet tried to sing a song, they wouldn't be able to do it very well. If my ears tried to digest my dinner, they wouldn't be able to do it very well. Each part has its own role. That's the natural system. Then you come into what it's become like, where heredity has been imposed, where a hierarchical system has been imposed. And what we know is people are suffering injustice. But what does that mean for us? Well, what it means is that every single one of us, and this is just one example right here today in India, but we see injustice everywhere. It's injustice every time someone hires someone on the basis of what they look like rather than on the basis of how well they're going to do the job. It's injustice every time there's discrimination on the basis of religion or color or gender or appearance. It's injustice for people who have the luxury to choose what to eat, what to wear, what to buy, to choose things to eat, things to wear, things to buy that render over 1 billion people hungry every night, that decimate our rainforests, that are taking up the vast majority of the water resources we have, the energy resources we have that are polluting our environment. It's injustice. The rest of the people of the world have a right to clean air, clean water, clean soil, our children, our grandchildren, future generations have a right to trees and land and soil and air. But unjustly, so many of us today are making choices today. And this is where legal and just are not always in alignment. Something may be legal, but it's not necessarily just. So it's legal for us to use the money we have, to use the freedom that we have, to buy up whatever we want. Doesn't make it just. But what we have is the ability to make choices. And whether it's a choice not to buy into a system of hierarchicalness, hierarchy, whether it's a choice not to discriminate, not to make choices in an unjust manner, whether it's a decision to actually speak out in whatever way we can to work against injustice. Systems are only able to last as long as the general population will go along. The minute that the general population stops going along with a system, it falls, or it begins to fall in any case. And so every single one of us has the ability in our lives to bring about more justice. But not just by being upset. Being upset by injustice sadly doesn't actually benefit anyone. But being upset enough to catalyze action, that's what it becomes about. So how can I let my frustration, my anger, my upsetness catalyze me into action? That becomes the question. And that's something that every one of us has the power to do. Whether it's poverty, because it's unjust. It's unjust for some to have so many and some to have nothing. And those who have nothing are vastly more than those who have a lot, which is even more unjust. It's unjust for a tiny percentage of the world's population to have control over a vast percentage of the world's resources. But if every one of us who has the power to make a choice, who is one of those in the population that does have access, makes a choice for the greater good, makes a choice for our sisters and brothers across the world, makes a choice for the environment, for future generations, well, we have the power. We have the power to change it. Every meal we eat, everything we buy, everything we wear, how we travel, the jobs we do, how we move through the world, the leaders we vote for, all of that is making a difference. So we should never feel powerless and just keep looking for more and more ways to make more and more of a difference.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. How can we follow our Dharma in a competitive environment where people are prepared to take shortcuts or achieve certain goals at any cost? So this is the age-old dilemma. How can you be honest? How can you be good when dishonesty, when cheating, when lying, when scheming wins out? How can these two things possibly fight against each other? And if they are fighting on exactly the same level, for exactly the same thing, sure, chances are if you're prepared to lie and to cheat and to scheme and to cut corners, on that most superficial level, you'll get there faster. I mean, if you look at something just really basic, like if you're running laps, for example, if you're in a race, you're running laps around a track. Well, if you're prepared to cut out of your lane toward the center, well, naturally you'll get there faster because the distance is shorter. But what's so important to remember is that's not what we're racing for. That's not ultimately the goal. The goal is not success at any cost, or rather material success at any cost, money at any cost, a promotion at any cost. If I said to you, okay, you can get this promotion you want, or you can earn more money than you currently have, but in exchange, you're going to have to take sleeping pills because you're going to be so stressed. In exchange, your husband or your wife are going to leave you. You're going to start fighting with your kids. You're going to become an alcoholic. I mean, I'm making these things up. But if I gave you those options, if I said, okay, I have a magic wand. I've got a genie in a bottle. I'll give you the job you want. I'll give you the income you want. But I'm going to take something from you in the bargain. I'm going to take your ability to fall asleep at night. I'm going to take maybe your marriage, your connection with your kids, because of course it's different for different people. But do not think that people who are lying and cheating and stealing to get ahead are not sacrificing something for it. They are. You just don't know what they're sacrificing. So if you are prepared to sacrifice your inner peace, your ability to look at yourself in the mirror, your ability to fall asleep without some kind of chemical aid, okay, lie, cheat, steal, cut corners. Yeah, it still works sometimes. At least short for a short period of time. It's not the stuff that lifelong success is made of. The people I know who are the lifelong success people, the real highest of the high, not just success in this tiny piece, but the real success, even on a financial level, there's always integrity, there's always dharma, there's always honesty. Always. Because a dharma, non-righteousness, doesn't sustain. You could win that race. You might be able to edge somebody out of that promotion. You may be able to scheme a little bit more money out of this or out of that. But it doesn't last. And so when we ask ourselves, when the question comes, how do we stay living in Dharma? Well, we set our goals different. We don't have the same goal that people who are prepared to lie, to cheat, to steal, to sacrifice their sleep or their family to get ahead have. Because if those were your goals, you wouldn't be sitting here tonight. You'd be somewhere in the world watching a stock market or pulling an all-nighter in a company somewhere because that's what you needed to get ahead. You'd be plotting or scheming or lying. The fact that you're here means you have a different goal. A more holistic goal, shall we say. It's not that your goal is, I'm going to renounce the world, I'm going to take sannyas. May you all be blessed with great prosperity. But with great prosperity that includes the inner prosperity. The Dalai Lama has a beautiful, beautiful teaching, and it goes something like this. I'm not going to get it exactly right, but it says something like, the human condition is a tragic irony because we give up everything in order to make money. We give up our health. We give up our peace in order to make money. And then we try to spend that money to buy ourselves our health back. We try to spend that money to buy ourselves our peace back. And it's a beautiful teaching because that's what happens. And so when you realize that when you've chosen a path of Dharma, your goal is different. Your goal is not corner office at all costs, 5 or 6 or 8 figure income at all costs. Your goal is holistic prosperity. Your goal is inner connection. Your goal is inner success, which is, yes, we'd like to have abundance, but we'd like to be able to have peace. Because you can make all the money in the world, but if you come home at night to an empty table, nobody's ever taken a brick of gold and sat it in the chair opposite them over dinner. Nobody's ever taken their car out to dinner or brought their shopping bags into bed with them so they had something to, you know, put their arm over in the night. Nobody, at least that I know of. I don't know anybody who's ever crawled into their expensive car and, you know, curled up in the leather seats to cry themselves to sleep when they're in a state of despair and they have nowhere to go and no one to turn to, or buried their face in a pair of designer jeans. Right? I mean, that's not the stuff that we turn to in life. So any concept of success has to be a concept that includes, well, okay, after I've earned it all, who am I going to enjoy it with? I mean, what's the point of being able to eat, you know, caviar 3 times a day if you're eating it sitting across the table from a brick of gold? What's the point of all the wealth if you come home to an empty house? And so when we commit ourselves to Dharma, yeah, you might lose a promotion now and then if the boss is blind enough not to understand who's really the energy and the brains behind a project. And it happens. Bosses are human beings also. And sometimes they get misled. But in the end, the truth always wins out. And lastly, if you look at the teachings given to us in the scriptures, in the epics, if you look, for example, just really quickly, if we look at the Mahabharata war, right? So in your yoga program, those of you who are in it, whether you've already studied the Gita or whether you're going to study it, I mean, you're going to have it in the program. I don't know whether Mataji and Induji have started it yet or not. But the Bhagavad Gita takes place in a battlefield. And there's only one point about this battlefield I want to make now in response to this question, which is that the quote-unquote bad guys, they're not really bad. It's all, of course, multidimensional. And, of course, all of them are aspects of ourselves. The war is actually within ourselves. But if we look only at the plot, only at the most superficial plot of the story, you've got 100 bad guys against 5 good guys. That's your most superficial level plot story of the war. 5 good brothers, 100 bad brothers. I mean, they're not all bad, but they were led by Duryodhan, who was full of greed and ego and whatnot. Maybe we'll talk about that a different night. But for now, what you've got is 5 against 100. Mahabharata we're talking about. So 5 against 100. But how do they win? 5 against 100 is no fight. How do they win? Well, the 5 have, because remember, this is a beautiful, beautiful scriptural teaching that mirrors the war within ourselves. The 5 good guys, who do they have on their side? Krishna. Now, Krishna specifically says, he specifically tells Arjuna and Duryodhana in the very beginning, he gives them both a choice. One of you can have my army, the other one can have me, but I will not fight. So Duryodhana, of course, thinks, well, if he's not going to lift a hand, if he's just sworn he's not going to fight, well, then obviously I'd rather have his army. I mean, we're going to war. We're not going to meditate or to pray. We're not going for enlightenment. We're going to war. I need an army. So Duryodhana picks his army. And Arjuna, of course, has Krishna. Which means they have God with them. And when you speak about coming from a place of dharma, well, that's what you have with you. So no, you don't have the lying and you don't have the stealing and you don't have the cutting corners and you don't have the cunning and scheming. But what we're given, even without all of the other depth teaching that years of courses are rooted in and an incredible philosophical books and commentaries by, you know, the greatest sages in the world are written on. Aside from that, superficial level plot. 5 good guys with God, 100 bad guys with army. Who wins? And why? So in the end, moving forth with dharma, as I said, you may lose a promotion here or there. May look like you're not getting ahead. But in the end, in the sum total, when we look at the big picture, dharma always wins. Truth always wins. Righteousness always wins. So don't worry. Don't worry about people cutting corners. There's a lot of success to be had in this world. There's a lot of prosperity to be had in this world. And if you find that in a particular place, in a particular race, you're racing against people who keep cutting corners, and in order to get out of their lane and into the center, they keep pushing you down, well, maybe that's not the right place for you to be racing. Yeah, it may be the fastest track to success in your mind. You may have worked years to get a promotion into that firm or this company or that position. But if you're not able to live with Dharma and still have any experience of success, then maybe you need to find a different track. There's a lot of different tracks in the world. A lot of different people running their races around. And if you're in one where people just keep pushing you down to get to the finish line first, you may decide, this isn't the right one for me. And this brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.